This is the Senate Consumer Business Affairs Committee meeting in room 315 on Wednesday, June 4th, 1975.
Where is he? Representative Crest, we'll take you first. What's your bill?
2912.
2912.
Yes.
House Bill 2912.
Senator Robert Turner, the committee, for the record, Representative Jim Crest from Portland. And I'm here on behalf of House Bill 2912. Now, I believe you received a letter from me relating to...
I did, but I didn't make copies of it. Did you send it to the other members?
No, I didn't. Sorry. To some changes that would have to be made. There was some things that came up when the bill passed the House. And I assured those that were concerned about these particular things that would do everything possible to see to it that they were amended on the Senate side.
Jim, why don't you tell us the bill? I guess it's just, this is the marking bill?
Right. This is the bill that would require, and maybe I can take you right through the bill, require that any article used or intended to use for food, drink, confection, prepackaged would be, would have to have a price marked on it. And, of course, it is in conjunction with the scanners that are refining coming in or being used in some of the stores. Now, we have did, I think, quite a bit of research in the last few weeks on the effects of this. I might quote from a it's from the Consumer Federation of America, and a new supermarket rip-off, packages without prices.
We have copies of them.
You have that?
Mm-hmm.
On, I'm sorry, I said the page on numbered as I see here. But inside it, it relates to some studies that were made and some information that was supplied to this group by the industries. And they quote the director of the Consumer Affairs, the National Association of Food Chains, and a couple of others. And in relation to pricing these products, that what the savings would be in conjunction with the scanners and the computerized systems. And in either case, whether they price them or not, it points out that there is a large saving in using these computerized systems. So I think when we're talking about what the cost would be, that it's going to be added cost to the consumer, which I'm sure that the opponents of the bill would say, that in reality it's not true, that they still can realize tremendous savings. Now this one points out that the industry says that a store with a $3 million annual sales and with no prices on the package would show a net savings from automated check stands of $34,700 a year.
Representative Chris, let me interrupt you because I know you don't know what this committee has done, but we had two bills, two Senate bills, that were not on this point, but we got off on this point on both bills, and we have had this book presented to us before.
Okay, fine.
And we have had information about the computerized system, and so I think we're quite well informed on what this is all about.
Okay, great. And I'm glad. I won't have to repeat it all, and you don't want to hear it.
Yeah, we've listened to it for quite a few hours.
So. Right, great.
But we do need to go to Hawaii to see it operate.
That's right.
Okay. In relation to these amendments that in that letter, there is another set, and do we have copies? Was the committee supplied with this?
Yes, I have that. Yeah.
Now, these amendments deal with a couple of other concerns that people had. We're suggesting that after line 16, that this particular amendment be put in. This act is not applied to liquid milk products, bottled soft drinks, beer, or malt liquors. This is so we're not saying that they have to put a stamp on a bottle of beer or a carton of milk or a bottle of pop. It sure isn't the intent to do something like that. We also amended the bill in committee in House Labor to exclude prepackaged, or to make it just conform to prepackaged material. In other words, you don't have to price that individual onion or carrot or something like that. Although some of those items do come prepackaged and would warrant pricing and marking. So we would suggest those amendments, and most heartily, and also these particular things that deal with down here in section 3.
Would you go through that? I just sent for copies of your letter, but I'd like you to go through
okay.
it.
Okay. Let me quote from the letter. The actual damages on 2 lines 22 suffered by the consumer will annually actually be minimal. The difference between the posted and actual price, probably this would be from 2 to 10 cents per item at most. The reasonable attorney's fees award on line 23 is virtually meaningless. Actions for actual damages under $200 would be in a small claims court jurisdiction, so there are no attorneys allowed there. We're saying that we could delete these provisions. Also, on section 2, no merchant shall offer consumer commodity for sale that is not individually marked. If, hypothetically, somebody came in and went like this and wiped off the price or something, and then said, we could say, I didn't mark it, so we're going to sock it to them. We don't want that to happen either. So we'd ask that that particular part be taken care of. And I'm sure that this could happen. Now, I think basically that's about it. It's a tough thing to try and wrestle with if you're going to lay out a law like this and put it on the books. How you enforce it without some kind of provision in there to say if you don't do it this way, we're going to come get you. It can be abused, as I think I've expressed here, and that's a concern. People could take advantage of it, but maybe in your wisdom you can see a way that we can enforce this and without allowing these possible loopholes from cheaters. Like I say, I don't think that the industry is needs those types of things happening to them. We're asking that the industry consider the consumer and their right to know what the products are priced at, not asking them to be penalized by unscrupulous people that may come in and ding them to death on $25 fees or fines.
Are there questions of Representative Chris? Thank you very much.
Okay,
I appreciate
you.
Your time. I know you're as busy as we are.
Madam Chairman, if we're going to take action, if this is the last meeting, then we're going to have to work out that wording now.
That's right.
Is there anything from the legislative council?
I don't know. we could get somebody up. We have a number of people signed up to testify on this bill and the other bills, so there's time for us to work it out. We need to hear what the other people have to say about the amendments and that sort of thing before we decide on what actually is going to be in the bill. Okay, thanks. Peggy Bird. From the North Senate Cat's office, she here? Okay, Nellie Fox.
Senator Robert, members of the committee, I'm Nellie Fox, and representative of the Oregon AFL-CIO. And in the interest of time, I know we're all very conscious of that. I'll just reiterate a few of the points that I'd like to bring out here today. We are in support of the bill and of the amendments that you have copies of. We realize that there were problems, and so we helped to draft these amendments that were presented. The section on the violation, I think if we could word something that is, would show intentional violation would solve the problem on that.
Do you have amendments prepared now?
No, I don't. I was just made aware of that concern just a little while ago. So the intent to that would be not an accident, so that Jim's representative Chris's problems would be allayed. I think this is an extremely important bill that the consumer does need. They need to be able to compare the prices within the store itself. Another item that has been brought to our attention is the comparison of prices after you get them home. Not all of the scanners are going to provide itemized receipts for the consumer. And this is a point that has been made that you could compare later, but with not all of them providing that, it would be difficult to tie it to that. Representative Prest told you of the minute savings that the industry itself says that will be realized from not putting the prices on. It breaks down to just $225 a week, according to their own figures, that would be saved by not putting the prices on. And we feel that that's a very small amount of money for the lack of the prices. And shopping in a grocery store without prices on each one is like, to me, like shopping blindfolded. You just simply can't. There is national legislation pending. Hopefully that there will be some uniform results from that. Rhode Island, as the state has just passed it as state legislation, and Chicago has passed the city ordinance requiring the markings of the grocery items because of the consumer interest in this. I think that's all that would be additional information that there's in the book that you've been provided for. I call your attention to the last page, and that is a comparison study, and I think it covers the situation very, very adequately. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Now, this amendment then that's in here says whole provisions, whole law acts would apply if passed only to merchants if they utilize the universal computerized checkout
system. Yes.
Would not go into effect except for those persons as they begin to use it. Is that correct?
This is correct.
Questions of Ms. Fox? Thank you, Nellie. Mr. Backinson?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Allie Backinson with United Grocers from Portland, Oregon. I previously have sent copies of a letter to all the members of the Senate side relative to this bill, 2912, and I believe that some of the things that Representative Kress has already said were contained in that communication. Therefore, I will not repeat what he's already said. I had referenced to milk and soft drinks and beer in my comments. However, there are a couple of things that have been stated here this afternoon. I think I've got to be corrected, and that is that computerized checkouts, we have them today. There's a difference between a computerized checkout and a scanner type computerized checkout. So I think.
Mr. Atkinson, I have to interrupt you. We have a call of the Senate for the information of committee members. It's on the strike breaker bill, and it's on the motion to re-refer to committee.
My name is Peggy Bird. I'm an intern for Representative Bear Katz, and I testify for the House. There were a couple of questions raised on the House side with minor points in 2912, and Representative Katz would like to submit some amendments to help with some of the questions. One of the questions was on page 2, line 17, where it says, no merchant shall offer merchandise for sale without a price mark, and the amendment would insert after no merchant shall, insert the word knowingly. On page 2, line 22, the question.
Do you have copies of the?
I gave them to the clerk.
Could we have them, please?
Someone else gave them to the clerk.
The amendment?
Yes.
I think they've been
don't have them.
No. Okay. Pardon.
Okay, okay, you go ahead, now we've gone.
Okay, the after numbers are still on certain numbers, several of the lawyers questioned the problem that Merchant might have if a dishonest customer would wipe the price off with that. Still make the merchant liable for an unpriced mark. Piece of merchandise. And this they thought would take care of it.
Okay.
Page 2, line 22, section 3, where it says, after recover actual damages, delete the sentence, the court or the jury may award reasonable attorney fees and punitive damage not to exceed $25, and insert after recover actual damages, and punitive damages not to exceed $25. If damages were not to exceed $25, it would be in small claims court where there would be no attorney. And then the third amendment is on the House amendments to print at A in Gross's bill. On line 2, after universal products, the word care should be deleted and code inserted. It's a printing error on the amendment sheet.
Well, I'm not with you on that last one.
On the A in Gross's bill, there were some House amendments, and there's a printing error.
Okay.
The care needs to be taken out and code put in.
Using the universal product code.
Code.
Okay.
Yeah.
Questions of Ms. Bird?
Let's see, Madam Chairman, where is she on this bill? She's supporting the bill?
She's representing Representative Katz here.
Well, I was wondering, wouldn't it make a difference if, in fact, the computerized device that was used in calculating the amount had a tape which was so devised that one could identify the items that they've been charged for upon the completion of the computerized tally?
It would make a difference after the fact, but the point is that a great many people would like to know before the total is presented to them at the end what the individual prices are, so that they can judge how much they're buying and how much money they're spending before the end.
Well, what if there were a requirement that there be identification or the price be marked on the bin or shelf in which the commodity, from which the commodity were taken? You have the price on the shelf on the one hand. That's at the point where you pick it up and put it in your basket. And then on the other end, after the computation of the total price by this machine method, if you have the tally with an identification by item, as one of the computer people came here indicated they can do, wouldn't that provide the guarantee to the purchaser that it would be able to determine
singing yourself now?
Would be able to determine that they have been correctly charged for the item based on the bin price.
Well, part of that's what part of this bill addresses is being correctly charged, but part of it is also knowing, as I said, what you're buying as you go along so that you have an idea. Shelf prices, in my personal experience as a shopper, are notoriously missing or out of whack with what the can prices are now. And the second problem is that makes comparison shopping a little difficult when you're trying to remember what the bin price is when it's not marked on the can. If you have to go from one section to the other to comparison shop, it makes it difficult unless you've got a very good memory for figures.
Well, I don't really, or do. Do many people, do you think, pick up a... in most stores, aren't most of the canned beans put in the same place?
But if you're trying to make a differentiation between the difference in price between frozen, canned, or fresh vegetables, you're dealing with three sections of the store, and to remember from one section to another, or the length of the meat counter, that sort of thing.
Hey, Representative Katz has come into the room, so maybe we ought to...
I would like to testify. The amendments are promised to Representative Frommeyer that they would be...
She has presented the amendments.
Okay, and they are valid, and he has made a good point.
Representative Frommeyer testifies to the fact that they are valid.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're on 2912 now.
Do you still want to hear testimony on that?
No, not if you think that your assistant has done well enough to present the amendments. We're quite satisfied with.
Yeah, all right.
So if you want to testify on 2086, we'll simply accommodate you and hear your testimony, but we'll come back to 2912 for other people.
Thank you. Chairman, members of the committee. Unfortunately, you have not had the history regarding this bill that the House had last session and this session. The bill failed last session on a very close vote. It got involved in a lobby hassle, and it also got involved in Democratic caucus politics. And I won't bore you with the details, but the merits of the bill got lost somewhere. This session, they finally were heard. Without all the other politics involved in the situation, and the bill passed the House with a very good and healthy majority, and out of Ways and Means, with, if I recall correctly, a unanimous vote of all the Ways and Means members.
Why did it go to Ways and Means?
Okay, the bill was amended. We have a committee on the House called Labor and Business Affairs. We're not as fortunate as you in the Senate. The word consumer has been dropped. The bill was in Labor and Business Affairs and got amended pretty radically and then forwarded to Ways and Means because they thought it was going to have a fiscal impact. It got forwarded from the committee itself. Okay, I made a commitment to the chairman of that committee that I, as a member of the subcommittee of Ways and Means, would not make substantive changes the first time around. We voted the bill out as amended by the Labor and Business Affairs Committee to the full Ways and Means Committee. The full Ways and Means Committee refused to accept the bill in its amended form. They said it was worthless, it wasn't worth the piece of paper that was written on, and directed the subcommittee to take the bill back to subcommittee and amend it so that it's a good unit pricing bill. With those kinds of directions, the subcommittee did it, amended it back to its original bill, accepted the amendments from Mr. Wilson, who was representing the Oregon Retail Grocers Association, sent it back to Ways and Means, and on the floor of the House. And that's the history of the bill. We will probably be receiving amendments trying to put it back in the original form that it originally came out of Labor and Business Affairs, if you can follow the travels of this bill.
Would you accept that if that's already
No.
thought about?
Okay.
May I ask one question?
Senator Hard?
What's the fiscal impact of this?
There is none, really. There is none the way it is. I didn't really even understand what the fiscal implication of it was when it went down away from me.
That's
okay. Okay, there may have been something that I missed.
This is a problem with this joint.
Okay.
We'd have had it a lot sooner, too, there, I might add.
Yeah, well, I tell you, quite honestly, I'll be very candid with you, it may have been a delay tactic not to have this bill come out. And it's unfortunate because it is a good piece of consumer legislation. I ought to tell you the food dollar the food costs have really gone up considerably, and we can stretch the food dollar by doing several things. One, we don't have to eat as much. We could begin to compare which is the best buy when we go shopping, and we could start taking a look at which is the best quality. Now, this particular piece of legislation does not answer the issue as to quality of food, for example. I can't tell you, nor does the federal government by its labeling requirements, can tell you how much more solid than liquid a can has of peas. This bill will not tell you what tissues absorb more. This bill will not tell you which peas taste better. This bill will not tell you which wax has a better shine. This bill will not tell you which product has more of a nutritive value. But many shoppers right now don't have the luxury to make those kinds of decisions because they don't have any money. And this is a kind of a luxury that some people can't afford.
And really, they don't give a damn because they're really concerned about which, where they're getting their best buy and which is cheaper for the same amount of weight. The federal government tells us that we have, all the labeling has to include weight, and there should be a relationship between weight and price. I think a consumer should be able to compare the cost of items in a group of different containers without needing a computer. The federal law requires that the weight be listed. All we're asking now is that the weight and price should be related. The consumer should know how much does each of the various brands cost. They know that now. They might not know it without 2912. They should know how much more or less will it cost to purchase the smaller size instead of the larger size. And they should know that if they had a lot of containers to choose from, where would they get the best buy? We have found out through an Oxford study that 5% of the time, the large economy sizes, the ones that are called king size or economy or family size, in fact cost more per pound than the smaller ones. And we had a little bill that I introduced in House Labor and Business Affairs. We called it the low unit pricing bill, just to allow, just to prohibit the large sizes from costing more than the smaller sizes, and that bill was tabled. Now you will hear, I'm going to give you an example. If a shopper buys this over this, he or she could save 34 cents. If a shopper can buy the 10-pound bag over the 2-pound bag, he or she can save 90 cents. That's 90 cents on one purchase. I have some more products to show you that if they buy the larger can over the smaller can, that's a saving of 15 cents. That for two items, a consumer can save $1. The argument you will hear, it costs too much for the stores to implement this. Well, they don't cry, they don't make the same cry when they talk about the electronic scanner. The electronic scanner costs a lot to set up in the supermarket. And I'm sure that the cost there, if the cost will be passed on, certainly, you know, is going to be passed on to the consumer. I'm going to argue that the cost has not been passed on to the consumer at stores that have adopted unit pricing in a few minutes. The figures that we have show that it might cost as high as 3% of gross sales to as low as 0.06%. Thriftway, the store I shop that has adopted unit pricing, the cost is 0.01%. We have limited the unit pricing to stores with gross sales of 1.5 million or more and have having computer services available. So we are not including the mom and pop stores. We're talking about the biggies. There has been a charge that if you force all the stores that fall into that category to adopt unit pricing, the price of the articles will go up. We did a survey in 11 stores and found that there was no significant difference in the prices between those stores that have unit pricing and those stores that don't have unit pricing. I shop at both Fred Meyer and Thriftway. One store has it, one store doesn't. There is no difference. And there could be a saving to the consumer of as high as 10%, and in this particular case, almost a dollar. Now, you will hear an argument that if it's such a good idea, some stores have it already, and let's keep it voluntary. Well, the stores that have it, about a quarter of the items are inaccurate, or the labels are missing, or they're not complete. They'll have a unit pricing for two sizes, but they'll ignore the third. They'll have unit pricing for two different brands of peas, but they'll ignore the third brand of peas. And it's inconsistent and very difficult for the consumer to follow. I'm going to give you another argument that I used on the floor, because this is the argument that Mr. Wilson used in Ways and Means. He says, you're interfering with the free enterprise system. And I thought about that for a while, and I asked some people, are we in fact interfering with the free enterprise system in the area of agriculture? And I asked the consumer representative to give me some kind of examples where government has in fact stepped in. And I support it because it's a good idea where it's needed. And it has. We have third-party grading. We have nursery inspection of plant disease. We have mandatory grading of potatoes, onions, filberts, walnuts. We have meat inspection. We have dairy inspection. We even have control of milk prices. We have license fees on agricultural commodities. And where it's necessary and where this particular industry has required it to keep the industry alive, I support it. And I think in this particular instance, perhaps interference, if you would call it interference by government, is necessary to give the consumer a break. I think the consumer has a right to know how much he or she or it can save with the kind of knowledge that would be available on the shelves. The bill also adds a provision for a sign to be posted so that the consumer knows what a unit pricing tag looks like, and Joey and Laura is going to show you what a unit price tag looks like so they know how to use it. I've done some shopping. I'm embarrassed to take my computer, but I did it. And a lot of people have recognized me in the store that I shop in, and they ask me, what are you doing? And I said, we have a bill. And this is the problem. And they say, my God, pass it. I can't make heads or tails of these the prices as compared to the weights. Because some weights are 8 ounces, some cans will be 8 ounces, some cans will be 7.5 ounces, some cans will be 6¾ ounces. And without unit pricing, they don't know where they're going to get the best size. It's an important piece of legislation. I hope, it's unfortunate it got caught in a hassle. I don't want it to get caught in a hassle this time around. I want it to pass on its merit. I think it has merit. And I know it's late in the session, and I strongly urge you to support this piece of legislation. It's a piece of legislation, really, whose time has come.
Madam
Chair. Questions of Representative Katz, Senator Cook.
Back to the first bill, and that is the computer.
Wait a minute. Are there any questions of Representative Katz on House Bill 2086?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Senator Powell.
Is the $1.5 million gross?
Yes. If with your permission, I'd like Joanne Lohr, who is a consumer representative, to come up and answer any of the technical questions. But it's on page 3, 2A, a grocery store that sells consumer commodities, the gross annual receipts from the sale of which is $1.5 million or more, and that is affiliated with a chain system or cooperative with common purchasing warehouses, on and on and on. So we are eliminating, we are not including the small stores. Originally, this bill was a lot lower than 1.5 gross.
And so a small store doing over 1.5, as long as it was not affiliated with a chain system, would be exempt?
That has access to it, that utilizes a computer.
And where is chain system defined? How many stores make up a chain?
Okay. It has to be affiliated with a chain system, or the definition is right there. It's something that has common purchasing, warehousing, or distribution facilities, and utilizes a computer in the normal course of its business activity. This means for inventory control. This common facility has to be doing inventory control with a computer, or the store wouldn't have to be in front of it.
Other questions? Senator Turnson.
I should be looking at it, but does this mean each package has to be marked?
No. Maybe I could just pass this out because it has a shelf tag on it. This is from, this is Mary Grosser's shelf tag. It just goes.
The package itself does not have to be marked. For those commodities that are described in the bill, there is a shelf tag.
And the shelf tag is printed by the computer.
What do you do if the grocer suddenly decides to have a sale on that item? Wouldn't this more or less stand to keep him from?
There's an exemption on page 4, section 5,
If an item is on sale for 21 days or less, it is exempt from being unit priced.
How do you determine whether it's on sale or not?
Well, I think this is quite common in a lot of the...
Well, what I'm saying is, if I were a groceryman, I'd just put a big sale out in front, see everything in my store is on sale.
Okay, and after 21 days, if the price doesn't drop down again, I mean, doesn't go up again, then we'd have to say that it's been on sale for longer than 21 days, so now you have to unit price.
Put up a different colored sign.
Yeah, but if you haven't raised the price, then that indicates that your sale price is your normal price, and therefore you can't call it a sale price.
Other questions?
Somewhere you've got to indicate the price of the article. If it's not on the can itself, it ought to be on. It's got to be on the label next to it. The consumer ought to know how much a product costs.
Thank you, Representative Katz.
Thank you.
Yeah,
because you've got to leave, see.
Madam Chairman, I would like to ask the sponsor of that computerized bill a question. Could I ask her a question before she leaves?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, real
right.
Fast. We've got
to
leave.
How would you... I'm not too inclined to just absolutely require unit pricing in the case of the computerized, not unit pricing, but item pricing, to distinguish between the two things.
Two of them separate, because they really are two separate bills.
Yeah, let's call it item pricing in the computerized bill. And I wondered if we were to amend the bill to do these things, if it wouldn't basically protect the consumer. Now, it might not protect every job, but it would protect the consumer if we did this. And tell me why it wouldn't. If in the bill we would amend it to require that there must be available to the consumer and if somewhere within the store a complete list of the prices of all commodities not individually marked, they have to be kept and made available to members of the public at all times. Two, the bin or shelf would have to be marked with the individual prices of the items sold that are thereon or therein. Three, the prices could not be changed during any shopping day. And if they're open 24 hours a day, or you might say from midnight to midnight. Four, a tally of items sold must be provided to the customer at the checkout stand identifying the items sold and the price per item. Five, an index of abbreviations used in the computer must be located at the same place where prices of commodities are made available to the consumer, and then provide concurrently that if they fail to either mark the items individually or to comply with this provision, then the penalty applies. Wouldn't that protect the consumer?
Well, my answer to you is no.
Why?
Okay. Items were in the basket, and I didn't have a computer, and thank God the items were marked, because if I didn't quickly do some arithmetic, I would have been short $2 at the counter, and I didn't want to be embarrassed because I was a state representative. The consumer ought to know when the item is in the basket, how much he or she is spending. I guess what I'm saying, you know, it's not going to help those. They don't help the sophisticated shopper. But we're dealing with a lot of people who are not really very sophisticated because the whole situation is frightening. They don't have the money to buy the food. And to put another obstacle in the way is not what I call consumer protection.
Could I say something on that?
Well, fast, because we don't know what's going to happen around here, and you should see the list of people I have to testify on these two bills.
I know. I think I was next on the list to testify in 2086, but maybe.
Well, we have some business to take care of because Senator Drewston has to go back to the floor, so thank you, Representative Katz,
for taking your time
to come over.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Drewston.
Because I have to leave for several minutes to go to the floor, I'd like to move out House Bill 2353 for the new recommendation.
Okay, Senator Gerstead, the motion is to pass out House Bill 2353 with a due pass recommendation. This is a bill that's on for a work session. Any of you that have interest in any of these bills, at any time you want to make a motion today because it's the last meeting, I will accept the motion on any of the bills that are on for a work session. Because you're going to be here and you're going to be gone, you're going to be back and gone again. Is there discussion on House the motion to pass out 2353?
To which one?
2353.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I want to make a point.
Senator Burbidge.
2353 would increase the rate 2% to a person to borrow on his own life insurance. And if the argument was only that we would be getting that money back for the little policy holder, and it would be going to be immediately or soon distributed to the small policy holder in larger dividends, and he's the one that was going to get the benefit, and I could buy it. The small policy holder, and I'm talking about anybody that's a working person that might really be in the big chips, might be able to afford $10,000 or $20,000 worth of life insurance, or more probably about five. And he needs to borrow on his life insurance, and maybe he's right up against the wall, he can't go anyplace else, and he needs to borrow some money on his life insurance. He ought to be able to get it because he's borrowing his own dough at the very lowest price. And to raise the interest rate to that particular group of borrowers, to me, is just about as inhumane a thing as this legislature could perpetrate. And if this bill passes out of here, I'm going to do the best job I can on the floor of the Senate on it.
Further discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Burbidge?
No.
Senator Cook?
No.
Senator Howard?
Aye.
Senator Powell?
Aye.
Senator Smith?
Aye.
Senator Drewston?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Senator
Cook. Could I make a motion on House Bill 2086, move it out, do pass? That's the unit pricing bill.
You got to have five votes to pass it out. There's five of us here.
Well, I think maybe all five of us might vote for it, I would hope.
There's a bunch of amendments because they've been presenting them to us right and left, Senator Cook, when you weren't here on the
This is the way this committee's going to run, and here is walking out when somebody wants to make a motion. I'm all
Senator Jernstead had a bill to carry. We'll take your motion, Senator Burbidge, whenever you want it. Anybody else want to leave?
I'm pretty much quiet and listening to lots of testimony if the ones are going to make.
Well, Senator Cook, you weren't here when the amendments have been proposed to us by the sponsor of the bill. They want the bill amended.
I'm perfectly willing to amend it.
Well, that was not your motion.
No, but I would have acceded to any such motion.
I don't think that that's my responsibility to move amendments I'm not aware of. I don't think that's any excuse for these people walking out.
Well, Senator, I cannot control this committee, Senator Cook, and
I move all the bills that tend to the floor do pass. We can all vote for
it. There are three of us, and it takes five to send
them. We refer all bills to the desk.
Move the book to the floor.
Senator Cook can carry all of us. Maybe we can have a meeting later on.
He says he'll come back if you can get fine.
No, I'm perfectly willing. If the sponsors wanted to make some amendments, that's quite all right with me.
Keith Burbage will come back.
Yeah, you'll
come back. Tell Keith Burbage, I don't give a damn. He never comes back. Really doesn't matter. Okay, I apologize to those of you who were seriously trying to carry forward with these bills and make something out of them. That would pass the floor. And I think Senator Cook's motion was not in order because of the amendments that we have presented to us to make the bill a bill that would perhaps get out of this committee and pass the floor. Even the sponsors admit that there were things that had to be cleaned up in it. I'll continue with the hearing, although with the three of us here, we'll take your testimony, and then the committee will have to decide whenever we can get them back up here, and they may dribble in. Joanne Thor on 2912.
Well, I think I did want to clarify. Senator Cook moved House Bill 2086, which was the unit pricing bill, and I believe the one that's being talked about for amendments is 2912, the item.
That's right, and we're on 2912.
Yeah. Okay, I really just wanted to speak as a consumer member of the Consumers Food Council and also representing the Oregon Consumer League that both of these organizations strongly support item pricing. And I did want to bring up one fact. I spoke to someone from National Business Machines a few weeks ago about their scanners. They market these scanners. And they told me that right now the accuracy of the scanners is only 60%. 40% of the time, they are not reading the universal product code correctly. Well, obviously, it's going to be a while before they market them if they're making that level of errors. But to me, as a consumer, that's another really important point. If the scanners are going to be making errors, if the label is creased on the can, then I want to be able to see it right away that the scanner has made an error. And if the easiest way of doing that is if the price is on the item and I can just immediately look at it and see if it's ringing out the same price as was on the item.
Okay, any questions?
Could I, let me get a correction. I moved 2086 a while ago, Madam Chairman. Am I correct? There were no proposed amendments to 2086. The amendments proposed, I understand, were to the other.
Okay, I understand that there are amendments to be proposed to 2086. And
but there weren't any here.
And this is the list of people to testify on 2086, Senator Cook, and I don't believe that it's proper to pass out the bill unless we've heard from the people who want to testify on it. No more than be proper just to listen to the testimony of one person either for or against and make a decision on the bill. Thank you, Jim. Mr. Wilson, on 2912.
Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Otto Wilson. I'm Director of Oregon Retail Council, a division of Associated Oregon Industries. Our organization represents a very large number of grocers in the state of Oregon, perhaps most of those that would be affected by this bill. I'll be very brief. It is our position to endorse allowing the consumer to have the advantage of the price saving that can be accrued if it is not necessary to laboriously stamp a price on each of the 8 to 12,000 items in the average grocery store. This bill is tied directly to scanning checkout, and it cannot be evaluated in any other manner but in that context. And truly, the bill would prevent the industry from market testing, scanning checkout in the state of Oregon to determine what the reaction of the consumer would be to its advantages. We have heard some testimony about the increase of cost of food products and how difficult that is for the consumer. We agree. And yet, you are imposing upon the food retail business the necessity to mark by hand every item in the store. And this is an additional cost. And I object to the reference to the cost being only $225 a week, because we're talking about a very substantial sum of money. Let me quote briefly from a letter from one of our retail chains. The average sales last year per store were $2.5 million, with a 0.6% net on sales, resulting in a profit per store of $15,000. Our experience indicates to us that the individual pricing will cost us another $5,000 to $10,000 a year. At $225 a week, if my calculation is right, we're up into the $11,000 level. We cannot treat that lightly and say it's only $225 a week. It's a significant amount of money. And in a marketing process that operates on as close a margin as the food industry does, it's necessary to take great care in any added cost. And we must realize that added costs do get passed on to the consumer. Where do these people think the money comes from? Only the consumer can provide the added cost. Reference was made to the cost of the scanning checkout system, and may I refer to that very briefly. It's very expensive. It will not be installed in the store unless there is sufficient volume to warrant that kind of investment, and you realize that any equipment that you put in a store, you anticipate that it will provide for you some advantages that will warrant the amount of money you invest in. And the scan checkout system and its testing in various parts of the country has indicated that it speeds up the checkout stand by 35%. That it is attractive to the customers, and that it increases the volume of the store. And that's why it is worth the investment. In the state of Oregon, it's going to be some time before we see a scanning checkout system. It has been erroneously reported several times to members of the legislature that there are stores in the process of installing it in the state of Oregon, and I have investigated each case, and it simply is not true. Suppliers of this type of equipment have assured me that they have no orders for equipment at this time in the state of Oregon. It's still in a testing situation. It will be improved, I'm sure, considerably before it ever reaches the full market. Last Sunday, there were three distributors of this type of equipment displayed their equipment in the Portland Coliseum. The members of this committee were invited to view those systems. I did. And I'm even more impressed now than I was before, that this is something that is probably the first innovative improvement in 40 years in the food marketing industry.
Excuse me. Would that invitation come by mail?
Yes. United Grocers sent a letter to each member of this committee and each member of the House Labor Committee.
I'll get to that letter in about 2 weeks.
Well, I'm sorry. It should have been done by telephone.
I would have been there.
It was the first opportunity that anyone could have seen this in the state of Oregon. And it was a demonstration-type unit. IBM and NCR and one other.
is it really worth the cost to the consumer to require a food market to apply by hand to every item a price when the shelf price will be sufficient indication of the price of those items? Convenience is the only thing that's been offered as a reason. And I say that for that convenience, the cost is too much.
Thank you. How can different chains have unit pricing and not charge any more for their products than those who are not doing?
Some stores now are using, no, we're not talking about unit pricing, we're talking about package or item price. Some stores sue us, well, for instance, a Prairie Market doesn't do it at all in order to save the labor. Some stores will price each item in order to appeal to the group of the public that wants it. It's a merchandising procedure. Others will not do it in order to save the cost of labor and to be more competitive. And this is the most competitive business that we have in the country.
But we're, if a store, and I understand there are stores who do put a price in each package, are selling that at the same price those who are not, we're,
they may be more efficient in some other area or may be cutting out some other service in order to offer that. There are no magic wands, Senator Powell, as you well, are well aware. You're in a very competitive situation. You buy a product, you pay for the cost of handling it, and you deliver it to the public. And some people do it more efficiently than others. But there's no magic. The consumer ultimately pays for whatever the cost may be.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you.
Mr. Reinke?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and member of the committee. I was having a very brief. I heard so much about the two bills this afternoon that if I wander from one bill to the other, I hope you will forgive me. I'm a little confused at the moment myself as to which one is which. But at the request of the Consumer Division, I shall be very, very brief.
Isn't that your job, to confuse us? We don't know what we're doing?
I hope not.
Oh.
I do want you to be confused about this bill. Speaking to 2912, the price marketing, and I would like to, for the moment, touch on your last question about whether or not it is possible for one store to price mark an item and sell at the same prices as others. I think there is an assumption there that I certainly, representing Fred Meyer's company, cannot agree with. We don't believe that you could do that if you were doing everything at the same price. Mr. Fred Meyer has been in the grocery business for some 50 years in Oregon and has, whoops, I told that story once and we got off onto the energy and the loss of the extra car and the home in the mountain. I better not get into that trouble again. But Mr. Meyer has built his business on the basis of service to the public, of giving them the best bargain at the best price that he could provide, and that has grown for him one of the largest and finest chains in the whole Northwest. He wants to continue to do that. He does not believe that doing this by mandating the price marking of every item will accomplish that. Now, at the present time, he does price the items, and when he goes to the electronic scanner, he does not intend to price every item. He does, unless, of course, you pass a law, and it is not his intention to do so. It is his intention to price, have on the shelf mark, and to have available for any customer who chooses to identify the package with its price, available a marking equipment for that purpose. Now, I would have no objection. I think there's no reason to put that into law. I think that's something if his customers want, they should have. And if you want to put it into law, it's fine. But I still think that would make the most sense is to make it available. I have some amendments here in front of me that I think were submitted to you today. Is that the one that has an A, B, and C on it, on this bill? I would like to attract your attention to item number C for just a moment. Stores who have traditionally operated in the self-service style, commonly known as Greek Central Markets, are exempt. Now, if this is an absolutely vital necessity for one chain of stores, why is it not an absolutely vital chain of necessity for other stores, merely because one of them has done it before and one of them hasn't? And I would like to ask what the meaning of the word traditionally operated means in that amendment. Does that mean that no one else could ever again go into a self-service Greek Central Market store? Now, it says to have, you must have a record of doing this, as I read that amendment, and I would be very concerned if we were to pass legislation that would limit the ability of other people to go into a business. I think to restrict the business and limit it to the present people that are in it at the moment would probably raise more problems than you could possibly solve with this bill. If I can answer any questions, I'll be happy to, and I won't take any more of your time on 2912, and I'll wonder about 2086. That's a long list, right?
Tell us about 2086.
2086 is the unit pricing bill, and again, Mr. Meyer's position has been, and he did discuss this morning, the possibility of coming down and testifying himself. He was discouraged by the fact that at 89 years old and the fact that the committee was liable to come and go.
The committee wouldn't be here if he's that smart.
Yes, he knew that they couldn't, well, or at least couldn't count on their being here on one of what we hope is the dying days of the session. But if his position is that if the customers wanted it, he would provide it. And when the electronic scanning device that everyone talks about comes into effect, this will be a normal and natural result of that scanning device. And at such time, there is no problem doing it. And that, incidentally, is the way that the bill came out of the House committee in the first place. That when electronic scanning went into effect, it would go into effect. And then it had a self-destruct clause on there which would give it an opportunity to be tested, and if it worked, fine, they could continue it. If it didn't, it would automatically die. But to suggest, and we're back then to the $225 a week or the $5.17 an hour that is paid for this price marking, the tremendous amounts of money that go into these scanners have to be paid for someplace. And the difference of opinion that you're faced with here today is whether they are going to be paid for by the consumer or whether they are going to benefit the consumers through reduced prices and through labor-saving devices, which is what it is. It's going in as a labor-saving device. And that concludes my testimony on 2086, unless I can answer questions.
Does Fred Meyer believe that it's in the benefit of the consumer to be able to readily tell the difference in price per, say, ounce in the product at the marketplace?
Not unless quality comes into the figure as well. We think it's a very, very deceptive figure, and this has been talked about. You've been told that this does not do anything for quality. That's very true. There is nothing in this bill on unit pricing that could tell anyone whether which can of corn had the most water in it. And to say that the poverty level consumer cannot afford to be concerned with quality, I think begs the entire issue. I think it is fully as important to understand and to know labels and to know that consistently you will get corn, for example, that is not half water if you buy a particular label. I think that's much more important than to know that there are 12 ounces of corn and water in each can and no way of knowing how much of it's water and how much of it's corn.
You're not going to know that anyway.
I agree that you're not going to know that anyway, but you don't know it from this, and the fact that you do this just on price doesn't...
Well, maybe we should at least let them know which can has the cheapest water.
I'm not sure.
Here's the problem, and I didn't get a chance to see it because we tend to work overtime here, but there was recently a documentary on television on the white collar rip-off or something like this.
I didn't have to see it either.
Fixing of machines to overcharge, that sort of thing. And I don't see how the business community
fully expects the public to go into a store, load up a grocery basket, take it into a clerk, and let them run it through a machine and then take X number of dollars. I cannot understand how the business community can even justify doing that to people.
Well, I'm not going to get into a rip-off discussion with you because I don't think there was any intention on anybody's part to suggest that particular merchants were involved, or their employees were involved in rip-offs. I do watch at the supermarket counter, and I do occasionally make notes of what the prices are. If I pick up a papaya and it says 39 cents, I don't have to write it down with a pencil to get up to the shop, and if she rings up 49 cents to raise the question. And I agree that there are rip-offs, but I think that what builds businesses is honesty and integrity on the part of the merchant and the people going there knowing that they're going to be treated properly.
I guess too, but when we have examples like the Yellow Cab Company in Los Angeles ripping off everybody who got into a cab for a total of some $2 million by fixing their meters at a higher rate than the sign said, you've got to understand that there's going to be some mistrust. I think you've got to understand that there will be a rip-off.
I would not deny that there will be rip-off someplace every day by someone. I couldn't quarrel with that in any way. I just don't think this bill is going to solve that problem. I don't think nobody solved that problem yet.
Well, I think that we could give the consumer maybe a tool that if they wanted to make sure that they individually were not being ripped off, that they could make the test.
My testimony just a moment ago was that Fred Meyer intends to provide them with a marking pencil with which they can write the item down, price on that item, and to take it to the check stand and to compare it. And under this new tag, they will have the name of the item and the amount, and they will have the can with the price that they've written on it, and they will have taken it off of the shelf that was marked. I think the protections are there for what you mentioned, the consumer who chooses to make that test.
As long as all stores are as agreeable, I guess.
That was the minority report in the House. And incidentally, how that bill got to Ways and Means is a bigger history than it appeared to be today. I thought I knew how it got to Ways and Means until I heard the testimony today. Now I don't know how it got there.
Okay,
other
questions? Thank you, Mr. Reed. We have one other person signed up on this bill, Wanda Merrill.
Madam Chair, I have submitted written testimony in the interest of time.
Okay. I'll share with the people who are here also on 2086 that we have this whole list, as I pointed out, Senator Cook, I guess 15 or so people, signed up both for and against 2086. I don't know, the committee apparently has dissolved itself by reason of the actions of the two or three members of the committee. And I don't know if it's worth our time to take testimony on these bills or not. I was given a message from Senator Burbridge that he would return to the committee when I could guarantee him 5 votes on both of these bills. And I guarantee every one of you, whether you're for the bill or not, that this senator doesn't cater to the tantrums of any other senator in this session or this assembly. And therefore, if that is the attitude of Senator Burbridge, that he will not return to the committee, except upon those conditions, I have no control over what will happen with these bills, and because I do not intend to go out and lobby for them. That's not my function. And I don't intend to do it. So that is the situation. And if there's any of you who want to be heard on 2086 and you want to speak to 3 of us under those circumstances, we'll be happy to hear you. Is there anyone who cares to be heard on 2086? I might, before you begin, Mr. Horner, those of you who are here on 3184, I fear you're caught in a trap.
unfortunately. Because, again, I'm not sure, and I had I known that this was the way things were going to happen, I would have put 3184 on first, and we would have taken your testimony and made some decision on your bill. But these are the unpredictable days of the legislature. So we'll hear your testimony if you want to give it to those of us who are here, but I cannot guarantee that this committee will be back together again for a vote. It takes 5 members to vote out a bill.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I'm not throwing a tantrum, and I'll be right back, but I had 2 tabs and 2 cups of coffee.
Well, we all have a problem. Mine are that simple. Okay,
well,
Mr. Horner.
I'm David Horner, president of the Argonne County Grocers. I would like to say that I want to oppose House Bill 2086 in that it will, without a doubt, increase the cost of operations in the grocery store. And I don't believe that the cost of the results of this this extra cost is going is really goodbye for the consumer. I was interested in Representative Camp's remark. She indicated that the large supersize of things, some things were cost more per pound than the small ones. But her samples here of the 5, 10, and 2 pound sugar indicated that on the 10-pound sugar you saved 9 cents. Now her 2 examples didn't follow in line at all. I think there are possible times when the largest size is not the cheapest, because you might have the medium size on a special weekend sample and could be cheaper than the extra large size, which may or may not be on special. I really don't have a lot to say other than I've been in business 40 years, in the grocery business 40 years this July, and I do not believe that this is a goodbye for the public.
Questions, Senator Smith, Senator Powell? Thank you, Mr. Farmer. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on 2086?
Come forward. Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I am...
Would you come forward? That little thing picks up your name on the tape, and we need to put it on record.
I am Herb Todd, representing the Oregon Independent Grocers, and also Drive and Save Markets of Rosenberg and Eugene area in Lane and Douglas County. I am opposed to the bill of 2086, mainly because I feel it is a cost increase to doing business that will not benefit the consumer. The cost-benefit ratio is not justified at the present time. I do recognize that there are certain people who do use it and did use it. But to the best of our knowledge, and the surveys have been taken, one taken by Jewel Tea Company, who put it in on a voluntary basis, tried it in their stores. I've seen it by actual experience and talked to their managers, and they say at the most 15% of the people are using it. And I don't feel that we're justified in adding the increased costs this time when we have so many other costs that are increasing the cost of doing business in the grocery food business. We're all protesting the high cost of food, throw up their hands, are confused by the variety of products. But when you throw in another item here of a cost factor, and it all adds up, it may not seem much. This is a little bit here, a little bit there. But again, you're putting it in. At the same time, you're putting in another bureaucracy here in the state of somebody to enforce and see to it that you have it. Unless you're tired of relying on somebody in the consumer to report and make the necessary reports. We don't need this additional expense at this time. When we reach the point that we do, then I think I could be all for it. But let the competitive situation take it. At the present time, Safeway, Albertsons, and some of Thriftway's markets are using the system. They have availability to a computer that can do it for them, and they are doing it. And if the demand by the public is so big and so good, I'm sure that the competition is going to join the crowd. We went through the little bit here of not marking anything up until the product was sold off the shelf. When the chains come out of this, and there was complaints about it, others talking about even a law to stop it. But immediately you find that the competition joined the crowd because they found that the public wanted it. And when they did, competition forced the rest of us to join the crowd, the bulk of them. And this is the way that competition will do and serve. Let it serve it, and let us not have so much overseeing of it. And I say that in the food business, whenever we can cut down and decrease our costs, and there are only two major variables in the food business that we have anything to do with. One is labor and the other is advertising. And the so-called box stores or your grease pencil stores have shown what they can do if the customer is willing to go in and mark the price and do without a lot of extra service. So let's leave it alone. Let's not legislate it into it and require a lot of these things until there is absolutely proven that the consumer has a need for it and wants it. This is all that I have to say, with the exception that we can always remember I started the food business when I was 13 years old, and I worked in it off and on all that last almost 50 years. And I'll say this, we started an old service type grocery, and then they said that we found out that if the customer pulled the merchandise off the shelf, you could save some money. It cut your labor costs down. So that we went to the self-service type food business. They said it wouldn't work, people wouldn't go for it. But now it's the majority of the type of food markets that you have now. So let's let these things find their way through on a competitive way, a trial and error basis. Let's not hamstring it now in the development stage and say that you've got to do this now.
Any questions? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Wanda? I don't know. I really see no point in continuing.
I have a written testimony, and I just want to make a comment that the governor does support this bill.
That'll be noted in the record.
I just simply want to say that Oregon Retail Council does object to the bill.
It'll be recorded that Mr. Wilson testified he objects to the bill.
I did too.
Yes, sir.
I'm Richard Neal of Pioneer Market in Ashland, and I would like to say that we also object to the bill. There was one statement made that it was $1.5 million, that was a big store. That's approximately where we are, and I would consider us a small store. And I do object to the bill.
Are you part of the chains?
No, an individual market.
Then you'd be exempt.
Up to 1.5.
I think you said made a statement that we would be exempt, but if it passed into a law, competition, I think, would force us to it, and it would add to our costs.
Joanne?
Is there any way of adjourning for now and coming back into session in a half hour or so?
I have no control over whether or not the committee members show up in this committee meeting at all.
Well,
there is no way I can subpoena them, force them at all to appear in this committee.
Well, Senator Brown would like to come back, but she can't leave the floor until they finish something on the judiciary. And there are two other people who would like to come back and vote on the bill. It's up to you. I would like to see a vote on it.
Why aren't they here, the other two?
Can go get them.
As I said, this chairman is not going to cater to anybody, and I don't intend to be their servant and wait around for them to make up their minds when they're ready to do something.
You're in geothermal in about 10 minutes, Madam Chairman.
And consequently, I don't intend to continue this hearing. I will talk with you people from the solid waste disposal to see what we can do about your bill.